breaking news as it happens. You're listening to Kevin McCullough Radio.
So this breaking just moments ago, CEO Jack Dorsey of Twitter defending his decision, speaking out for the first time about why he banned President Trump from the platform after he got intense backlash from critics in recent days.
That's Martha McCallum talking about the ever-evolving face of Jack. Sounds like it should be a movie, The Evolving Face of Jack. Speaking of movies, or at least plays, my next guest knows a thing or two about those because he spent a lot of his time in the theatrical community here in New York City. He is the New York correspondent for The Federalist, and he not only writes for The Federalist, today he kind of had the ultimate happen because he went, I believe the term that the young kids say now is meta, when Tristan Justice wrote about David Marcus in the New York Post and then quoted him back in the Federalist article that Tristan Justice wrote. Anyway, David, it's good to have you back. Happy New Year, by the way.
Happy New Year.
You were making the observation that I think several have made, but it's worth pointing out that when Twitter comes to this selective deciding of who to purge here in the new year, I was a victim of this. That they have had very, I would say, inconsistent enforcement, but you've actually isolated it a little bit. Talk to us about what you observed.
Yeah, as you say, the Twitter's justification that they give for themselves for all of this blocking is that it violates safety guidelines. So I wanted to see, what I could find that might also violate safety guidelines. So I went in, didn't take me very long, probably all of about 10 minutes. I found the hashtag kill Trump. I found the hashtag assassinate Trump. I found an account that calls itself pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon. So obviously a leftist chant about killing police. Antifa has all kinds of accounts and they use them to organize their riots. So really quickly, it became apparent that justification just doesn't work. It's just not true. And what we all suspected was true is true. Twitter's not acting in the interest of safety. Twitter's acting in what they perceive to be their own best interest by censoring their most fierce critics.
Right. And this brings about a much bigger issue. But let's break it down for people that are listening. Why is that observation, this hypocritical, inconsistent enforcement of this, why is that important, David Marcus?
Well, Twitter's important. All of these big tech companies are important in different ways. Facebook is much more important in terms of the general distribution of news and media to people because it's a much larger platform. But Twitter is an enormously important platform among influencers, among people like journalists and artists, the people who have megaphones. And so when you are taking conservative voices out of that mix, it really changes what's acceptable and what's not acceptable within our discourse. And it can actually do that really quickly, and it has been. I would argue without Twitter, there is no chance that anybody would be running around making these claims that, the U.S. government was minutes away from being overthrown during the horrible events of last week. It serves as this echo chamber that just allows completely absurd sentiments to work their way into our mainstream corporate media.
Yeah. Well, and the truth is society operates a lot differently now. 25 years ago, the idea that a social network online, if it existed, may have been of some importance, but it wasn't like the all exceedingly important, town square that it's kind of become now in terms of communication. And, I'd love to hear your thoughts on Rule 230 and whether or not they are monopolies and whether or not there should be some degree of, I'm not much for government oversight. And I certainly have very strong feelings about when governments can tell companies that they need to break up. But it seems to me this has become a much bigger thing than what the mom and pop shoe store on the corner is.
Yeah, absolutely. So So 230 and the monopoly question are really like two discrete things. They're related, but they're different. Let me tackle the monopoly question first, because one of the things that defenders of Twitter like to say is, okay, you don't like Twitter, go build your own alternative. So a company named Parler did that, and it was the number one app on the App Store, and lots of people were moving over to Parler. And after the events at the Capitol last week, Apple, Google, and Amazon all moved simultaneously, they claim without coordination, to ban Parler from their web hosting services, from all the services that they offer. The upshot of which is that Parler is not functional right now. So, I mean, that's a monopoly, and it's a really scary monopoly because, railroad barons and telephone companies, their monopolies were bad for the economy. These big tech oligarchs have really dark dystopian visions for our future that they're trying to execute. And so to allow them to completely control access to the internet, which is where we are right now, is a big problem. So that's a problem. As far as Section 230 goes, those protections were meant to protect platforms, not publishers. The difference being that a platform like Twitter was supposedly neutral.
Right.
And that, they shouldn't be held responsible for comments that are made on their site because they're not making editorial decisions. Well, as I pointed, as we see with the Kill Trump hashtag that's still up there, they obviously are making editorial decisions. Not only that, they're an interested party in the politics of the United States. So, yeah, I do think 230 is very tricky. But I do think that it's at least worth looking at how we can change those rules.
Well, and it's going to have to wait because I don't sense that with the new administration, there's going to be 1 ounce of interest in pursuing any of this. What's your take on that, David Marcus?
I think that's right. But I think as far as the monopoly question goes, the left wing of the Democratic Party, people like Elizabeth Warren, have expressed a belief that we need to break some of this up. So that might be an avenue where you could see some bipartisan work.
Okay.
Over the 2 years.
Huh. I would love to see something like that come out of the next couple of years. Anyway, read David's piece in the New York Post, and then you can also click over and read the piece in the Federalist where he's quoted today. But David Marcus, Federalist, New York correspondent for the Federalist, and we appreciate you being with us. And again, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Kevin McCullough Radio coming right back. Don't go away.